Welcome to another week. It is Monday, March 11, and today is a big day for a number of reasons. Because on March 11, 2020, the World Health Organization declared the COVID-19 outbreak a pandemic. Huge day. The Oscars are on later today, midday New Zealand time. We're talking more about those later on in the show. And it's also day two of Chloe Swarbrick officially being the new Green Party co-leader. Although I would argue it's day one. Seeing as it was announced at about like 11-ish on a Sunday, you wouldn't really count that as your first day, would you? Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen and this is what's worth talking about. UNICEF has declared malnutrition in Gaza an escalating crisis, with women and children reportedly worst affected. A spokesperson joins us to explain the current conditions on the ground. A clinical psychologist shares some tips on how to stop that brain from whirring for all of us overthinkers of the world. We're chatting all things Warriors and how to commentate live sport after the Wire's defeat to the Sharks. Plus, who will be today's big winners at the Oscars? We have all the predictions and details you need. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Fears that malnutrition in Gaza would start to claim the lives of Palestinians are becoming a reality, with, according to UNICEF, an escalating crisis. A report just published by the organisation suggests women and children in particular are suffering the most, but the situation for the entire population has been defined as dire. There are some tiny signs of hope, though. Sweden, the European Union and Canada have said they will resume aid payments to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Many countries paused funds after Israel accused a handful of UNRWA staff of involvement in the attack by Hamas last October. The EU, UK, US and others are also working to open a sea route to Gaza to deliver aid that way. UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram is in Amman, Jordan, and joins us now to talk more on the malnutrition crisis in Gaza. Tess, thank you for being here. Just how bad is this?
It's a catastrophe and it's getting worse every single day. We know that there is not enough food to go around, and we also know that many people in Gaza are not getting access to the aid that they need to mitigate that lack of food. So families are incredibly hungry. There's a rising sense of desperation. And as you said, children are now dying, which is something that should not happen when there is aid just a matter of kilometres away.
So what is it that is stopping people from accessing this aid? Because trucks are managing to get in, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's two main things that we need to think about when we're talking about aid getting into Gaza. One is the aid crossing the border, and then the other one is the aid getting across the Gaza Strip to the vulnerable families that need it. So we're getting some aid in across the border, but nowhere near enough. There's still only maybe 100 trucks on a good day, and it used to be 500 before this war kicked off in October. Mm. So we're still talking about a very low level of aid, and that we need to improve that. We need less access restrictions on the aid that crosses into that border. And there's really complex screening processes that go on that could be reviewed in order to help us get more aid in faster. But then, of course, there's the challenge of, all right, we do get the trucks in, then we have to get them to the people that need them. And the two crossing points at the moment are in the south. And where we're seeing a lot of the issue with malnutrition is in the north. So we have to traverse the entire Gaza Strip to get the aid to the children that need it. And of course, there's challenges there, right? We're talking about a really intense conflict. So there's safety challenges, there's damages to roads. And of course, there's people who are trying to access the aid as we drive through Gaza to the north. So it's a really difficult situation. And then when we get to the north, there are access restrictions that often prevent us from getting up there at all.
Is aid access the main pressure point? If not, what are the others?
Well, of course, the war has almost eliminated the original food production that was happening in the Gaza Strip. You know, agriculture is almost zero to none. The commercial goods that were coming in to stock the markets has been heavily restricted. And so the population at the moment is incredibly reliant on aid for food, but also for almost everything else, clean water, shelter, warm clothes.
And Tess, what are the other major health concerns for people in Gaza? I've been reading about children suffering from respiratory illnesses.
Yeah, acute respiratory infections is a big one. Even more than that, cases of diarrhea. Seeing an enormous number of cases of diarrhea in children under five. And these sorts of diseases come from a lack of proper hygiene and sanitation, which is one of the other big issues in the Gaza Strip at the moment, and something that UNICEF is trying to work to rectify. Sanitation and water systems have been, you know, really badly damaged. Some of the water supplies have been cut off. And so people are having to rely on unsafe sources of water. And sanitation systems also aren't working, which means that we have people relying on, at the moment, it's one toilet for every 350 people. There's some leakage into the community. So it's really not a safe situation. And then you add on top of that, that people are living in very crowded conditions, particularly in Rafah in the south, where everyone has fled to. And so, you know, it just creates the perfect environment for the spread of disease.
Tess Ingram from UNICEF, thank you for doing the job you do. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. Now, in case you missed it, the government's announced it'll be restoring interest deductions for mortgages on residential investment properties. Now, if what I've just said makes no sense to you, and or it does make sense to you and you want to know more, you are in luck, because we have a Newsable bonus breaking news episode on that very topic and announcement. You'll find it in our feed. So to never also miss content like that, bonus content, news you can very much use, make sure you're following Newsable wherever you get your podcasts. Are you one of those people who just can't get rid of worries churning around and around in your head, especially before you go to sleep? If you are certainly not alone. Hello, my name is Imogen Wells. But some solutions may be at hand for both overthinking and ruminating. And yes, there is a difference. And yes, I would highly recommend saying the word ruminating out loud, because you never get to and it's very satisfying. To explain more, we're joined by Kirsty Ross, an associate professor and senior clinical psychologist at Massey University. Kirsty, hello.
Hi, Imogen.
Kirsty, you've been writing about the differences between ruminating and overthinking in the conversation recently. Can you explain why they're different?
Yeah, so rumination is also used to describe when you're chewing something over in a digestion way. And so in a sense, it's the same sort of process. You're mulling things over, they're going round and round and round, and that can be productive up to a point. However, what often happens is that the more people ruminate on something, it can start to become unhelpful and we start to engage in what's called overthinking. And generally when we're doing that, we're coming up with catastrophic negative scenarios about things that have happened in the past, or that things that might happen in the future.
Yep, I put my hand up. That is me quite often. Why do people get stuck with the same thoughts, Kirsty?
So the thoughts that tend to, I call them sticky thoughts actually often with clients, is because they generate a lot of emotion. So they can also be known as hot thoughts. So they bring up strong emotions if we're thinking about things that have happened in the past and mulling that over. And usually we're thinking about it more negatively than it might have actually happened. That can bring up feelings of shame or regret or anger or frustration or even sadness. And similarly, when we're thinking about things that might happen in the future, our brain is designed to look for threats and designed to look for problems to keep us safe. So it will do its job. It will come up with all sorts of things that could happen, negative outcomes, and that often creates a lot of distress and worry for people.
Is there a difference between overthinking and anxiety?
Well, they're often linked. So overthinking can certainly contribute to anxiety, and people who are a bit more prone to being anxious often will talk to me about that overthinking loop and feeling really stuck with it. So they're definitely related, and that's why it's really helpful, because most people in the community will overthink at some point. I overthink. And so when you can recognise that that's happening and engage in some strategies, it will reduce the chance you're going to get anxious or worsen your anxiety.
So, Kirsty, give us some of these strategies.
a long time ago, there used to be this idea of you could stop your thoughts. If you've ever tried to do that, it's incredibly difficult because the more you try not to think about something, what you often are doing is you then start to wonder, am I thinking about it now? Oh my gosh, I'm thinking about whether I'm thinking about it, so now I'm thinking about it, and it actually kind of gets you more in a muddle. Avoiding your thoughts also sends a message to your brain that these are so terrible, these are so difficult that, you know, it increases the emotional response to the thought. So it can really be counterproductive. So what we suggest instead is, first of all, notice what you're doing, recognize that you are in that process of in a loop and your thoughts are snowballing and getting a little bit more negative and more unhelpful is often a good way to think about it. When you notice it, either you're thinking about the past or you're thinking about the future, come back to the present moment, engage in some mindfulness, and that can be as simple as just looking around you, what can you see, what can you hear, what can you feel, sort of the five senses scenario, and make a decision in that moment that thinking about this is no longer helpful, it's making me feel worse emotionally, it's taking up a lot of my time, I'm going to choose to think about something else. So you basically distract yourself, and that could be picking up a book, could be talking to a friend, could be putting on a fun, upbeat song that you really enjoy listening to, doing some things which basically get your mind onto a different track, and that can help with that process.
Kirsty Ross, great to chat, Associate Professor and Senior Clinical Psychologist at Massey University.
Thanks so much.
I've already said it, but I will say it again. It is Oscars Day today. The 96th Academy Awards kick off at midday New Zealand time. But I want to know if you find them exciting anymore. We're talking a little bit about this later on the show with Stuff's TV and film reviewer James Crute. But just with all the other award shows that come before the Oscars, do you feel the Oscars have lost their spark? Or are they just as fun and surprising as they used to be? We'll have a poll up on the Stuff Instagram. Get your vote in and tell us what you think. Our account is nzstuff, and you can always email us as well, newsable@stuff.co.nz. It started well, but the Warriors' first game of the season ended in defeat, going down 16-12 to the Sharks. But it is only round one. Following the game, play-by-play with Sky commentator Glenn Lama, who is here for Newsable Sports, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Glenn, not the start the Wires wanted for the 2024 season, not the start we wanted as fans. Where did things go wrong?
Yeah, well, firstly, Imogen, it's great to chat to you. Yeah, look, it was, I've got to say, at the end of the game, it was a bit deflating, actually. It was, there was so much expectation around that opening game. There were 24,000 in there at Mount Smart to watch the game. We were all hoping that the Warriors, you know, all the hype would kind of, you know, be converted into a win, but it wasn't to be. Things didn't really go overly wrong. They were a little average in the second half, I have to say. They didn't really execute on attack. They defended okay. But I think a bit of credit has to go to their opponents, the Sharks. They came here and gave up two pretty soft tries in the first half. But from there, the Sharks really did defend superbly well, and they nullified every single attack that the Warriors could throw at them, and it got under the Warriors' skin a little bit.
Did Roger Tuivasa-Sheck return with the bang that we all wanted as well?
Well, he had a quiet game. I mean, he certainly, you know, give him a 10 out of 10 for effort, like all the players, but he just couldn't bust tackles. It was kind of in contrast to what we saw in the first trial against the Tigers 3 weeks ago, and then the game against the Dolphins 2 weeks ago. I thought he played great in those two games. At the end of the day, they've really got to try and get their execution right for players like him and Dallin Watanisa-Lesniak, who had a fairly quiet game as well, to really flourish and really show their skills, what we saw, particularly in Dallin's case last year when he scored a club record 24 tries.
Hey, Glenn, because I have you here, I am fascinated by what you do for a living. So you're one of those very talented people who knows who has the ball as soon as they get the ball. But not only do you know, you are then having to verbalise that and broadcast that live while the game is happening. How difficult is that? Is there a tracker on the ball?
No. Look, a lot of prep goes into every game and every commentary I do. And I don't just do rugby league commentary either, Imogen. I've been to 9 Olympics and I've been, I do a lot of football and tennis and basketball as well. All goes into the prep, just like you've prepared for this interview. It all goes into the prep. You know, I've got notes on every single player. In fact, there's more time preparing the game than actually commentating the game because you never know what's going to pop up during a game. It's all ad-libbed. And I love it, the whole, you know, fly by the seat of your pants stuff. I love being a sports commentator and not knowing what's coming next. So, look, I love commentating sport. It's my absolute passion.
Sky commentator Glenn Lama for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Thank you for taking the time to chat. And the Warriors continue their NRL Premiership season against the Melbourne Storm, which you can watch live on Sky Sport 4 and stream on Sky Sport Now from 9:30 p.m. this Saturday. Sky Open will also have delayed coverage of the match from midnight Sunday. Happy 96th, that sounds funny, doesn't it? Academy Awards, everybody. At midday today, it is Oscars time. And can you believe we're still looking at the likes of Barbie and Oppenheimer as movies in the running for winning? I feel like we've been talking about those two for years. But of course, it's not all about Barbenheimer. There's plenty of other films that have been nominated. So who better to talk us through what to expect today than the one, the only James Crute, Stuff's TV and film reviewer. James, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Imogen.
Alrighty. Who is your pick for Best Picture? And then your dark horse for Best Picture as well.
I think it is hard to go past Oppenheimer. It ticks all the boxes. It's a great film. Christopher Nolan's never really had, you know, the admiration from the Academy that he probably richly deserves. Mm. It may be that he somehow misses out on Best Director, but Oppenheimer wins. It's hard to look past it, but if there was a dark horse, I would possibly go for The Zone of Interest, which is Jonathan Glazer's World War II happy German domestic life story in the shadow of Auschwitz, if you like. I mean, he's another man. He's a bit like Terrence Malick. He doesn't make many films, but when he does, they leave an impact.
And it also appears to be a race between Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone for Best Actress, because Lily won the SAG for her role in Killers of the Flower Moon, but then Emma won the Golden Globe and the BAFTA for Poor Things. Who's it going to be?
That's probably the most interesting one of the night, especially in terms of the four acting awards. I think it's going to come down to the wire. The fact that Emma Stone has won before for La La Land possibly counts against her. Mm. The Academy also, you know, are sort of seen to be being a bit more diverse in terms of Lily Gladstone. It's amazing reading about how Lily Gladstone's role originally was quite small, and then Scorsese sort of had some time to rethink the whole script, and suddenly she became a much bigger figure within the movie. And it's a fantastic performance. But then Emma Stone's is crazily good in all the weird and wacky ways. So, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to remember if there ever been a tie before. I can't see it, but you
they
know.
Both win purely because both of your last names include the word Stone.
For everybody.
Yeah. I'm somewhat contradicting myself here, although you did admit that this will be the biggest surprise. Because is there any surprise to award shows these days? We had the Golden Globes in Jan, BAFTAs in Feb, SAG also in Feb, Screen Actors Guild, that is. They do all seem to follow the same pattern, you know, and they kind of are the first one's the canary in the coal mine, if you will, as to who's then going to keep on winning.
Yeah,
or am I completely wrong?
No, you're not completely wrong. And I guess it's probably because we're more aware than we used to be of all the different award shows. The Golden Globes were always a wild card simply because it was, 90 really weird kind of Hollywood foreign press journalists who went on junkets and got all these lavish gifts and, you know, would recommend people who they liked more than necessarily the particular performance. But you have things like the Producers Guild, you have things like the SAG Awards. They're essentially branches of the Academy that vote for the thing. So really it's only Best Picture, because it's the whole of the Academy that are voting for it, that can be particularly different. Sure, there are some quirks, and I think Mark Ruffalo from Poor Things is a great example. He was completely snubbed by BAFTA, completely snubbed by the Golden Globes, and here he is in Best Supporting Actor. It's a brilliant performance. It is thoroughly deserving of it, but I can't see him beating Robert Downey Jr. unless there's some secret grudge, which there could be. There could be.
Oh, wouldn't that be a yarn? James Crute, always great to pick your brain. Thank you so much.
No worries.
And of course, Stuff will have a live blog running from midday with all the outfits and announcements you need. So make sure you check that out. And that is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a great one.
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.